Imagine the Future with Robots, the podcast for news and views on robotics. Hi, I'm Sabine, and this is Bhavan.
Good news, everyone. For this 60-second episode of the Robots Podcast, we'll be speaking with David X. Cohen, the head writer and executive producer of Futurama. He's also written for The Simpsons. In today's show, he'll be telling us about how to create robots for television and describing his vision of the future.
We'll then be asking you to imagine a crazy robotic character you would like to see in Futurama. If we think you have the best idea, we'll be sending you a Futurama DVD of your choice. But first, let's listen to the latest news in robotics from Christine.
Thanks, Sabine. In a step towards thought-controlled wheelchairs, researchers at the University of Tokyo have built a small vehicle that carries a rat and is controlled via the rat's brain signals. In the experiment, the researchers first recorded the rat's brain signals via tiny electrodes implanted in its brain, and then recorded the vehicle's movements. Next, they suspended the rat under the vehicle and fed its brain signals to the vehicle's motors. 6 of the 8 rats tested were able to successfully navigate the vehicle, indicating a working neural control. While the current results are promising, suspending the rat under the vehicle made it automatically move along with the vehicle, which prevented the researchers from measuring the rat's real movement intentions. Following the rapid spread of robots like the Da Vinci in surgical applications, researchers at the University of Florida College of Medicine are now tackling a related field. They use the robot to perform anesthesia. Using ultrasound imaging, a remote operator placed 2 catheters, allowing targeted delivery of nerve-blocking chemicals. For the time being, the researchers have only performed teleanesthesia procedures on phantoms. However, they are convinced that the research is promising. It allows to bring comparable perioperative care even to the geographically remote patient, and allows individual doctors to specialize further by performing more specific interventions than they could without the robot, ultimately resulting in better care for patients. For more information on the thought-controlled rat wheelchair and teleanesthesia, have a look at the Robots Forum at www.robotspodcast.com/forum.
Thanks, Christine. David X. Cohen is really at the forefront of thinking about robotics in society while writing for his television show, Futurama. Futurama provides a very funny account on the ever-increasing incorporation of technology into our lives. We had a short chat with him to find out what he thought about robots of the future. Hi, David. Welcome to the Robots Podcast.
Thank you very much.
Can you introduce yourself to our listeners?
As you just heard, I am David X. Cohen. I am the executive producer, along with cartoonist Matt Groening, of the TV show Futurama, and I'm also the head writer. And then in addition to that, I have a very tangential connection to robotics. In my previous life, I was a physics undergraduate and a computer science graduate student, and I actually worked briefly at the Harvard Robotics Laboratory as a computer programmer, basically in the late 80s, and I worked on some early software for facial recognition. The main project was a program that could locate Marilyn Monroe's eye in a picture of Marilyn Monroe's eye, so that's about where we were at the time, but it worked pretty well, actually.
Yeah. But it seems like you're not doing that now. So what are you doing at the moment?
No, I did derail from my robotics career along the way. I am actually back running the show Futurama, which has been on again, off again, as far as its air schedule here in the United States. But it debuted about 10 years ago now, believe it or not, and was canceled by the Fox Network here, then brought back to life by fan support, and we're back on again. So I've actually just been working hard, plugging away, making new episodes of Futurama.
Great. So how would you describe Futurama? What exactly is it?
It is an animated science fiction comedy show, And obviously, having those various labels, we had to decide what our priorities were early on. So Matt Graney and I actually spent probably at least a year chatting about what we wanted the show to be about before we actually went and pitched it to Fox. And ultimately, what we decided was that first and foremost, it is a comedy, and we're going to have to bend or completely discard some rules of physics and every other branch of science along the way in order to make the comedy the prime ingredient. But, you know, where we can, we do like to sneak in a little real science, and we have done that as much as possible over the years, so I do feel proud of that.
Right, and part of that science seems to be the inclusion of robots in your world, in your future world. So first question is, what is your favorite robot in Futurama?
Well, I'm gonna jump straight to a character that nobody has ever heard of, probably, but I'm here to inform, so listen up. This varies a lot, but actually, I was just watching some footage in a recent episode of a big party scene that showed many, many of our side characters who have only appeared once or twice in the history of the show, and I was suddenly reminded of who I would say is now my favorite robot for this week, at least. It's a robot by the name of Hair Robot, who has an extremely specialized function. He basically has a giant head, and if you suffer an accident which causes you to lose your hair, he will regrow a matching set of hair on his head and transfer it to your head. So he has about 37 different kinds of hair on his head at any given time, like a little hair garden he can transfer it to you. So highly, highly specialized function of it.
Well, that seems to be a very novel solution to something that Pfizer is probably pouring billions of dollars into at the moment.
In fact, I could use a little service from Hair Robot myself, but...
right. So I guess that leads us to another question, which is when you're making different characters for your series, are there any special considerations when you decide to make a robot a major character?
Well, I mean, the robot we should probably talk the most about is Bender, who's one of our main characters on the show. And he works along with humans and aliens, but he's really the representative of robot kind on Futurama. And so he was really planned heavily right from the very beginning. And it was pretty interesting to work on a robot character. What we decided right away for, again, comedy purposes, was to give him many of the worst traits of human beings all piled into one robot. So he drinks, he smokes, he steals, he threatens people. he's generally pretty antisocial, yet lovable somehow when we pull it off properly. And... one of the things we realized that we could do by having a character who's a robot is to show a lot of these antisocial behaviors and yet avoid a lot of the criticisms that a normal show, especially one watched often by younger people, would get for showing those behaviors. Because in Bender's case, when he drinks alcohol, it's as fuel, and when he smokes a cigar, it's so that he can harness that heat energy for his own well-being. So these things are all beneficial for a robot. And if we ever hear any complaints about his behavior, we can always say, well, he's not a human. You know, he's a robot, and they operate on a different set of rules. So it actually gave us quite a bit of freedom to have this character in the show.
That seems to give you some leeway in multiple mechanisms, I guess. One of them being the example of maybe humans programming a robot to be, let's say, in the case of Donbot, a criminal, or Calculon being kind of egotistical robot. And I guess the other issue is that of a programming error. So if you decide to program a robot incorrectly, their behavior...
Right. Well, the big example of the programming error in a robot in Futurama is a robot we have called Robot Santa. We didn't really try that hard on the names for these robot characters, by the way, did we? So far I've named Robot Santa and Hair Robot. They're really very elaborate names we have here. But Robot Santa, of course, is a robot who was built to actually physically fill the role of Santa Claus and bring joy to the children of the world. And he was programmed to give gifts to the good children and dish out punishments to the naughty children. But unfortunately, a software error caused him to think that every person on Earth is naughty, and so therefore he just comes and attacks Earth in a very violent fashion once a year on Christmas, or Xmas, as it's known in the future. So, yeah, we've certainly focused heavily on the possibility of programming errors in the future, and they have definitely come back to haunt us in the Futurama world.
I just saw an episode actually where Zoidberg is told that he hasn't been bad, and he's given a pogo stick. Now, I guess that's one of the exceptions.
Mainly because Dr. Zoidberg is our lobster alien. He always gets the worst of any situation. He always is receiving the least respect and getting physically injured and insulted and so on. So that was a case where we decided it'd be funny in this one instance where everyone else is always getting punished to have things go okay for him. But probably, again, due to an error in the software, I would have to say.
Great. So I guess it brings up another issue when you mention a lobster character in your show, but I think when most people think about the future of robotics, they think about the movement towards making robots more and more like humans. So it seems like your robots have human behavior and character traits, but they don't really look like humans. Did you have a particular reason for this?
Yes. For the most part, our visuals in Futurama are meant to celebrate or perhaps steal the great ideas of science fiction in the past, especially classic science fiction. And I think people have a certain image of robots in their mind that they grew up with. And I think visually in the cartoon especially, it's kind of fun to work with those classic images. And if you make the robot look humanoid in a cartoon, it really is pretty hard to distinguish it from a person. You know, in a live action movie, you might be able to subtly show angles on the face or a lack of expression or something, but in a cartoon, it would be actually pretty hard to distinguish between humans and humanoid robots. So I think you can get your point across quicker and your jokes across quicker if robots are big clanking tubs of metal.
I guess that raises the issue of the role that your show plays for people who watch it, one of them being entertainment. But as you know, science fiction plays a big role in getting people energized, enthusiastic about different fields. And one aspect of the future that people seem to consider prominent is the idea of robotics. So perhaps it's shaping people's vision of the future to see robot Santa destroying everything and hair robot, perhaps. Do you ever actively think about this kind of responsibility towards your viewers or to the people of our time when you write Futurama?
I would say when we're writing, we don't necessarily focus on robotics specifically to that degree, but we do think about science more generally and what is the tone with which we're treating science. What is science the villain? In other words, you know, are mad scientists out to torture animals and experiment on people, or is science the hero? And we do consciously try to make science the hero when possible. I grew up in a household of scientists. My parents are both biologists, and to me, scientists are noble and good people, and I think it's good to get that impression across to our viewers. So I think that is the general attitude we try to get across in the show. At the same time, we don't want it to sound like a lecture, and if there's a good joke that requires a little bit of blowing up innocent people or something in the name of science, we're willing to go there briefly. But we try to make science interesting and work it in where possible. We've had a few jokes, I think, that I feel proud of that I don't think other shows would do. For example, we had a joke about wave function collapse where the professor was watching a horse race and it was a photo finish and they affected the outcome by measuring it and that kind of stuff. So they had a quantum finish in the race. So I feel like you wouldn't see that on your average sitcom. So I feel good that we can work in some ideas at least and make them interesting and if possible funny and inspire people to enter the less destructive branches of science.
And because you spend so much time thinking about future technology and future science, do you have any personal feelings about the direction in which robotics will take us in the future? Is it aside from what you have to portray in your cartoon? Is there a David X. Cohen vision of the future?
if you want my real guess about robotics, which is a semi-uninformed guess, but really. I would suspect it will kind of sneak up on us. The thing I think about often in terms of how the future comes around in a way we're not expecting is video phone calls, which all the time when I was a kid, I would see someone making a video phone call in a cartoon on their wrist phone, or the phone. Even when I went to Berkeley in graduate school, they had a experimental video phone booth where it was just like a phone booth, but there was a screen, and you could call one other phone booth at, I think it was at UCLA or someplace. And it was always a phone of some kind which had been modified to make a video phone call. And I thought, okay, someday we're not going to have telephones, we're going to have these video telephones. But really it came through the back door through our computers, which we didn't even know we were going to have at that time. And now I frequently make video phone calls to basically connect my three-year-old daughter with her grandmother, my mother. And so the video phone call came around through the back door to connect grandparents and grandchildren on Skype calls, basically. And we were using it before one day I just suddenly said, hey, wait a second, this is the video phone call I've been waiting for since I was 8 years old. It just didn't come out through my telephone. So in a similar way, I suspect robotics may sneak up on us in terms of maybe our cars will start to park themselves more or avoid collisions more, or our vacuum cleaners, as they already might be, will start vacuuming themselves, that kind of thing. And before we know it, we'll have these various robots around, but we'll be thinking of them as these other appliances.
So it sounds like you actually envision, rather than embodied robots, you envision more a ubiquitous kind of invisible presence of automatons in our life.
I think that's right, because the humanoid robot, well, I think we could build sort of a prototype now. I really don't think you would want it clomping around your house right now, for the very reason we were talking about before. Any little error, which could be a software error, but could also be the robot stepping on a stray rubber ball or something like that and falling through your TV set. I mean, there's a very high probability of catastrophic error with big life-size robots walking around your house. So I don't think there's any immediate expectation, for me at least, that we're going to have these big humanoid robots in our lives. But who knows? I hope to be pleasantly surprised.
So I guess one other issue that people in robotics tend to think about when they're trying to build these humanoid robots, which one day may fall on a ball and destroy our television sets, or the future version of a television set, is the human-robotic interaction. And it seems like that's solved in the year 3000, and that Bender can adequately interact with everybody around him. Do you have a sense for how that may have been solved or could be solved?
Well, in Futurama, there seems to be very sophisticated artificial intelligence, obviously, because Bender's got a fully formed personality, perhaps malformed personality. So we made a decision early on, again, for storytelling purposes and comedy purposes, that robots, when needed, would just have human personalities, or perhaps exaggerated human personalities in the case of Bender, so he can carry on a normal conversation with our crew. By the way, I'm going to digress slightly, because an issue we had to face was, what would a robot's voice sound like? And I'm so used to hearing Bender's crazy drunken voice now that seems normal to me, but when we were working on the concept for the show, it was hard to get around the ingrained idea that robots talked in a robotic voice synthesizer voice. So early on, we thought Bender would sound like, "I am Bender, the robot," that kind of standard.
Or Danger, robot Danger thing. Will Robinson.
Exactly, yeah. And we tried some auditions that way, actually, and it rapidly occurred to us that that's going to get really boring if this is really going to be a major character who lives with our crew and works with them, and we're going to hear him every week. It's going to get very monotonous. So then we said, okay, what's next? We tried some really deep voices, and we had 13 guys in with the deepest voices you ever heard doing it. And it didn't seem that funny. It seemed really kind of threatening. And ultimately, John DiMaggio, who plays the voice of Bender, came in and did this crazy drunken rant, which actually went perfectly with his personality. And the one thing we hadn't thought to do was just pick the voice that goes with his personality as defined. And that, of course, worked better. So there's something to say for AI, I guess, which is, if you want people to really accept the robots into their lives, then give them some kind of a more likable voice and personality. But that's the AI side of the coin, I guess.
It's also apparently important for GPS devices these days, and people tend to follow the instructions of Swedish women voices compared to from what I've heard.
Apparently there's a Homer Simpson GPS voice, and every time you pass your exit that you were supposed to take, he says, "Don't!" And of course, I'm a big fan of The Simpsons and worked there for many years with the fondest feelings to The Simpsons. I will say it, I have heard it reported to me that it is, that too becomes tiresome when you pass your 11th exit and you hear your 11th dough. So, I guess a little variety too, a little randomness in your robot's reaction.
Right. That's actually a good point. So it sounds to me like Futurama, rather than being a representation of what people now think the future will necessarily look like, is more of an allegory. Would you agree with that idea, that it's a way of talking about contemporary society?
I would absolutely agree with that. That's another fundamental decision you have to make about a show is set in the future. Is it going to be a utopia, or is it going to be a dystopia? And we felt it would be much easier to tell stories that people could sympathize with if we set it in a world that was in some ways more like today, in that there's bad and good in the world, and technology is cool, but it malfunctions a lot. And it makes it a lot easier to tell stories that make sense, even if we're in this crazy setting, if we can harness both the good and the bad that come with the future.
So then what are the key lessons that you would hope people to take from Futurama?
As far as robotics specifically?
Well, as far as robotics technology and its role in our lives.
I would fall back again on your fail-safe features. Do not entrust your life too much to a robot. That's the lesson of Futurama. Also, don't lend your robot your car keys or your wallet or anything like that. Do not fall for that ploy. The robots are onto that. And do not let a robot breastfeed your baby. That was a bad choice in one Futurama episode. I think caution and would be wise to apply, and I think it will be, because I think people are scared to adopt anything new. So I think the only way things are going to really come into our daily life is if they're proved to be quite safe and comforting to people.
And what are the lessons outside of just technology? Is there a broader vision of what you're trying to tell your audience?
I think ultimately it's the optimistic view of the future, which is that if all of us, robots, lobster aliens, humans, and cyclopses work together, we might get through the problems facing humanity right now and live to see some more interesting problems in the future with attacking hair robots and so on.
Well, thanks a lot, David, and thanks for joining us.
Pleasure.
Between alcoholic and rude robots, there's a whole range of characters. So let your imagination go wild and cook up a cool robotic persona for Futurama. Post your ideas on the comments section of our website for a chance to win a Futurama DVD. All right, you've got 2 weeks.
That's it for today's episode of Robots. For more information on our guests, have a look at our website at www.robotspodcast.com.
Thanks for listening. Hope to see you in 2 weeks.
Imagine the Future with Robots, the podcast for news and views on robotics.